Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love, I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name's Chris Lambert.
My name is Travis Bean, and ooh, it's a glorious day, Chris. You know why?
Why is that, Travis?
Because as much as I like talking to you, I now get to talk to somebody else for a change in this show, and I can't fucking wait to do that.
As somebody that talks to myself quite often, I understand.
I understand. And if you can believe it, we're going to be talking about Kanye West.
That's shocking. And there, you know, I'm thinking people that I'd like to talk Kanye with, and there's few others than Mr. Dissect Cole Kushner, who joins us today.
What up?
I would say the list goes like Kanye, Kid Cudi. I guess then Cole. I guess Cole would be third. I'll give you that.
Rick Rubin might be in there somewhere.
Okay, Rick Rubin's third, you're right. All right, then Mike Dean's fourth, sorry.
Yeah.
And then, you know what, probably North, and then you.
No, this is great. I'm excited to talk with you guys, excited about the new season, and kind of unveiling this long, not lost project, but it's a long time coming in terms of it coming
out.
It
felt lost for a little bit on my end.
We started talking about this. I don't know when you started conceiving of it. I'm sure when you started Dissect, you were thinking Yeezus season eventually. But you approached us to start participating in the show or working on the season way back in what? It was like July of 2019?
Yeah, it must have been, summer. So almost 2 years ago. And then I think the scripts have been done at least a year for sure, over a year. So, Yeezus was a no-brainer. To be honest, for people that don't know, Dissect did My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy in season two. And then now we just released a Yeezus season on Dissect's feed on Spotify. But I think just contacting you guys then was like, okay, I know I wanted to use this. I was looking for writers anyways, because it's the only way that I was going to be able to maintain the show at the kind of the production output that I needed was to find, you know, collaborators and co-writers. And so it's like, oh, I wanted to use this. Oh, Chris and Travis are great. Like, they're great writers and they know Kanye like no other. So it was like, oh yeah, let me just find an excuse to work with those guys. It just was that. And so I wasn't even really thinking about timing. I think it started out as like a mini series in my brain. And a lot of that, I think, was just because like at that point, I wasn't so sure about repeating artists for seasons. So it was like more justifiable in my head to like, okay, we'll just kind of do a mini season on it. But obviously it turned into like a full thing. Yeezus is my favorite album. I'm not sure. I think you guys have said maybe it is one of your favorites from Kanye. It's my favorite Kanye album, and it's my top. It's in my top three, I would say, of favorite albums of all time. So it's just one that I've been dying to talk about. And I think, in terms of its delay, I think it's just it was just a timing thing. I had repeated Kendrick in season five because I did him in season one, and so I didn't want to go do too many repeats back to back. But then 2020 was such a mess, and Kanye was kind of you know, up and down, and it just didn't feel like it was the right time. And I feel like we've got a nice little window right now, excited nonetheless.
Yeah, that was one of those things. I mean, it feels like such an album for people in our age range that when it came out, we were already listening to Kanye, we were already into hip hop, and then it's this tipping point of an album that felt so immense and so out of left field in terms of what we had expected from Kanye, from the genre, and that it's still kind of stuck in our brains as something that we just need to discuss, especially as you grow into your professional field. It was the same album that caused us to start this podcast.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Was just, we need to explain that there's a narrative on Yeezus.
Yeah.
People need to like Yeezus as much as we do.
Yeah. I know there is that passion, like where you're like, you love it so much, and you're, you know, if you can get past like this, maybe some of the surface level aesthetic quality that I get people might not be attracted to, there is that desire into you to be like, wait, no, like, come on, guys, listen, like, see it fully, yeah, and then say you don't like it, but see it fully first.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I feel like the whole Yeethoven experience was a similar situation where I know it's Johan and I forget the second guy's name, who put together like Yeezus and Kanye, essentially, and mashing those.
Yeezus and Beethoven.
Or Yeezus, yeah, and Beethoven. Yeah, thank you. Mashing those together and showing that Kanye's arrangement and production is on the same scope and magnitude of Beethoven. And you hear something like Blood on the Leaves compared to a Beethoven symphony, and you're just like, oh, I can hear it when you put it in this way. And it just feels like this album sparked so much analysis and discussion. It's cool to see the different ways in which people with different backgrounds, different perspectives, continue to break it down and show how much depth there is, both sonically and lyrically.
Yeah, I think for this too, it's cool because, I mean, you guys are so lyrically and narratively driven. Where you guys are writers, Chris, I know that you write fiction. Travis, I'm not sure, do you write fiction as well? Or
no, Chris and I are both movie lovers though, and we're analyzing movies. So
I just like that. I like that too. I feel like there's a part of me that is also that. But you know, obviously, I come from like a strictly music background. So just having this combination of your narrative driven mind with my more musical driven mind and kind of both working on the scripts, and that way it feels like a really good synergy. Because we talked about this before, but it's funny how much the lyrical narrative stuff aligns with the musical stuff, where you guys are discovering things just through the lyrics, where I'm going to hear it in the music, and then it all kind of works together. And we kind of come to the same conclusion by different means, which to me, just like, there's so much evidence that he's thinking about these things consciously that at some point you even feel like you don't even have to justify it much anymore, because it's just so clear that these are kind of like conceptual albums, even though they don't really appear like that right away or as obvious as other artists. But you know, it's there when you start looking.
Makes me think about when you were doing My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy season, you had the big cliffhanger between Devil in a New Dress and Runaway, in terms of what it was, the unresolved E flat. I don't know.
I can't remember either. But, yeah. I can't remember the exact note, but yeah, it was the chord was unresolved the whole song, and then it gets resolved by the first note of Runaway.
Yeah. And we had recently, it covered, I think, like a similar stretch of that album, and talked about the narrative aspect of Devil in a New Dress introducing this relationship and the dynamics of the relationship. And you see how that carries over into Runaway. And what you're saying is similar conclusions, but based on the different perspectives that we have that show that Kanye just had that alignment to make form and function match both lyrically and sonically to reach the same level of, all right, this builds into this, which then builds into the next one and the next one.
And then it gets really crazy because you realize all the albums connect too. So
it's one of our big things. We're always like, you can just see, because each album's based on where he's at in his life at that time.
Yeah.
It just flows as a whole magnum opus, like, epic, which is amazing. I'm trying to think if you can find another discography in any genre that does something similar, where each album is that period of the artist's life, and because they're changing and growing, the whole thing plays out as this
epic. You could easily see it in a lot of artist discographies, but what's beautiful about Kanye is he's so vulnerable and bare about it all in a way like you don't immediately recognize. And he just, and I think too, which is good for Chris and I, who again have written about movies for years and have analyzed narratives and have really tried to unpack how stories are told. Kanye's approach to music is, in my opinion, very cinematic, and you can kind of see his tales play out the same way you would see a movie. So whereas I think most discographies, you could find that narrative in there, like you could see someone grow and evolve from album to album. The way Kanye does it, like, it feels like an epic. Like, it feels like a Marvel series. Like, it's an anthology. Like, it's this thing you witness, and it's just incredible to listen to and watch.
Yeah, I would say the only one that comes to mind is Kendrick. He's earlier on in his career, but you can definitely trace a narrative from even Section 80 through Damn, and really with Good Kid, Butterfly, and Damn, there is a clear connections where even there's a, you know, cliffhangers in each album that resolve into the next one pretty clearly. But Kendrick's on another level in the same way that Kanye's on another level. So it's not surprising that, you know, but yeah, it's interesting. And yeah, I do think of like a lot about, especially with Kanye, just like you're talking about Beethoven, and it's like, yeah, you can hear the sonic, there's some ties to be made sonically, but I think about them more as like historical figures. If you're going to be talking, like, if Beethoven existed today, I don't think he would be making classical music. I think he'd be making, maybe it's hip hop, maybe it was, you know, rock, but whatever was the prominent genre, you know, classical music was, or what we call now classical music was just the genre of that day, was just what people did. So knowing that now, and knowing that classical music really only exists like in the world of academia and sometimes on films, you know, it's interesting, in the first episode of this new season, like, we could, you know, the first episode is dedicated to Kanye West as a storyteller, and, you know, we have clips of him saying, I think about my songs like scenes in a movie, and yeah, there is that cinematic approach. But in terms of like thinking about him in the line of someone like Beethoven, like, I even compared him almost directly to Beethoven in the Twisted Fantasy season. But he's like, Beethoven was an artist that was, you know, one of the most popular in his day, that then, like, he wrote in the style that was popular, which was, you know, the formal classical style, Haydn and Mozart. And then he flipped everything on its head and created his own genre out of that, you know, influenced by those genres, but made it his own. And that's what I see Kanye doing with hip hop, where, yeah, he started out, you know, more or less, he kind of like drove the soul sample sound. That was, you know, a big part of what he did as a producer, but he was more or less kind of working within the boundaries of hip hop at that time. But then when he came into his own as an artist, and then I think the Yeezus is like the pinnacle of him flipping it, you know, flipping expectations. You know, the same way that like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony flipped expectations of what a symphony was and should be. I feel like Yeezus did that, 808s did that. But Yeezus, I feel like, was the most kind of like deliberate in that fact of like, no, I'm going to challenge you guys.
Very much.
And so, yeah, that's just one of the many reasons I was dying to talk about Yeezus was all those points of like, it rarely do we get an artist in his prime that takes this much of a risk, you know, and especially after coming after like nearly being canceled and winning him back. And then just like, once he, I feel like he figured out like, oh, like I can just like play with you guys like a little puppet. Like, public perception is just like a marionette. Let me just fuck with it a little bit, you know?
Oh yeah. I get it.
Was there anything really surprising to you in terms of your concept of Yeezus from the years 2013 to 2019 that's changed since working on this season?
Well, definitely you guys helped me flesh out the narrative much more than I had it previously. I always kind of knew it was an arc that ends with Bound 2 being very clearly a kind of resolution, although there's a twist that we talk about, but more or less there's this kind of very dramatic resolving moment at the end. So I kind of knew it, but you know, this is the same with any season that I've done, and I'm sure it's with you guys with any album that you've done of Kanye's. It's like, you don't really know until you dig into the details, right? Like, you might have an understanding of like the general arc, but what I get excited about, and I'm sure you guys are the same, is the details of how that's pulled off. And when you start to find the nuances of references that appear in this song and then come back in here. And then, like we were saying with Kanye, you find them in the music too, where, I mean, this season is full of some brilliant, brilliant uses of samples as kind of not only like sonic for their kind of like contrasting sonic qualities, but their thematic qualities, like brilliant stuff. And I didn't know any, I mean, I knew the On-Site sample was super clever in that way, but like when we get to New Slaves, the sample on, you know, the end of that is like, when you guys unpack that, because I didn't know that until I read your guys' script, I was just like, holy shit. Like, it's just one of those moments you like die for, right? Like that's why we do this.
That's one of the most like mind bending moments of Yeezus. I can't wait for people to hear about that.
Yeah. It's the first time reading those lyrics, because when I was first listening to the album, we were both living in Iowa and the album came out, and I was making hour long drives to go to a writing conference.
Oh yeah. Can we take this back? Maybe you're going here, but can we all share the story of like the Yeezus leading up to it? First thoughts, like relive that moment a little bit. I would love to hear you guys' stories.
Yeah. So Travis and I have been working together on our movie site, Film Colossus, and we have been doing that online for like a year. Had it met in person, had just talked on the phone, you know, handfuls of times. So I moved out to Iowa for a year so we could work like face to face. And I think I got there June 14th or something. And then this album comes out and I didn't realize it. So I was supposed to go to this writing conference. It was the first day of the conference. And I stopped at Target on the way, bought the CD, ran back to my car, tore it open, and put it in. And I tried listening to a stream of it while I was showering and getting ready, but couldn't really hear what was going on. And it was an hour drive each way. So for the next week, every day, I just have this hour of listening to the album in full on the way there, listening to the album in full on the way back, and just playing it over and over again. And I remember how much I was in love with the soundscape of it, how shocking it was, specifically Blood on the Leaves, because I never thought Kanye would make an epic on the scale of Runaway again, because how could you?
Yeah.
How many artists have more than one Runaway
in
their discography? And then Blood on the Leaves just was such a home run to me. So I was pretty obsessed with that. But seeing that arc from On Site with the interlude to where we get on Bound 2 and just the soul music non-existent for the entirety of the album till that moment, I knew early on that there was some kind of arc there. And Travis and I started discussing it pretty heavily. But it wasn't until a few years later when we started the podcast and you're talking about getting into the details. It was our favorite Kanye album. We had listened to it so many times and we had the concept that we had about what the trajectory of the story was. But when you start going through it and you discover things like the lyrics to the Omega sample and how that plays into the overall story, it was such a jarring thing, because you so often don't get confirmation about what Kanye's doing. He doesn't give interviews where he explains the albums. He just kind of leaves it. So when you have these kind of lightning bolt moments that are so clear in terms of their implication, in terms of the role that they're playing, it was one of my favorite experiences, not just the first time hearing that and how amazing it was, but the discovery of it was really cool.
Yeah. And I do remember when the album came out. Yeah, Chris, I think you were in Iowa and I was about to move there. I hadn't got, yeah, I hadn't made it there yet. I do remember, yeah, I was leaving from my friend's wedding. I was on a bus. I was getting on a bus to go to the airport to fly to Punta Cana. like so much was happening. And the whole time I'm trying desperately to like get a hold of Yeezus. Like I'm trying to illegally download it. I've bought it since, don't worry. but I was trying to illegally download it at time so I could listen to Yeezus because, I mean, Kanye's my favorite. Like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was such a huge album for me. Like before that, I was a big Kanye fan, but you know, that album opened the floodgates, and like, yeah, and it was the first year I lived with my girlfriend, now wife, and like it was an important album to us. So like I was really excited about Yeezus, and I do remember like getting on the bus and listening to it, and those first few moments you listen to Yeezus, you have the like what the fuck, like double take moment, like,
yeah,
you don't understand what's going on. And while I think that turns a lot of people off, and I know it did turn a lot of people off at the time, I've always been very attracted to albums and movies like that, or just art like that in general, that turns people off. We've talked about it many times in this show. Showgirls is my favorite movie ever. I love Showgirls, and I love it even more because everyone else hates it to death. Like there's something about that quality of art that I'm really attracted to. And like I felt like that was always there with Yeezus. I mean, especially On Sight. Like On Sight was my jam for like the longest time.
Yeah.
And I'm right there with Chris. Like I didn't know what the narrative was, but like musically, it's funny because we're lyrical guys, but musically I could sense something. I could sense like an arc and a change. And it was something I hadn't been able to define for years. But of course, when Chris and I started the show and you start going through line by line and you start looking at the samples and how the samples play into a narrative, like you just watch it unfold. It's incredible to witness. So being able to do that for Chris, like it took Yeezus from this thing that I enjoyed just sonically to this thing that I was like, oh shit, like it's 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like it's something else. Like it's something you haven't seen before that transcends stories and music, and it just became this thing in my life. I mean, that to me, that and The Life of Pablo are my two favorite Kanye albums. The Life of Pablo more for like personal reasons, but if I had to pick like the one that like represents Kanye, that represents like what music is, like Yeezus is it.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with all you guys. It's for mine's a little weird because I was just finishing up college at the time. It's funny because a lot of the records that I've dissected came out during this stretch where I was in college and was not listening to music outside of classical music really at all. And I was so entrenched in that world when I was in college that I missed the release of Twisted Fantasy. Like that was that was an album that I came back to. And I had loved Kanye like, you know, ever since the College Dropout. But you might have, you know, from the premise of my show, you might like guess that I'm obsessive when I get into something. So like when I was in college, it was like, okay, like this is what I'm doing. It's just shut out the rest of the world. So I missed so much of what I now consider as like the golden years of hip hop, or maybe not hip hop, but that transition between old and new guard that was happening in the early 2010s. I missed a lot of that. But I was coming out of the tail end of that. I would say actually Yeezus is what really like kind of like a snap of the finger of like, okay, you need to start paying attention to what's going on outside of this world because there's some crazy shit happening. But Yeezus came out. I remember I was working at a coffee shop and I would close the coffee shop by myself a lot. And we closed late at like 11. So I would listen to Yeezus driving home every night, just like, I don't know about you guys, but when I listen to this record still to this day, it has to be loud as fuck. Like there is no middle ground. It has to be loud as fuck.
Windows it has down. To hurt your ears. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so I just have, you know, very vivid memories of just listening to this at night driving in my little Honda Civic. You know,
Ford Focus for me.
Toyota Corolla for me.
And it was actually the time. Yeah, it was the fittingly the Corolla. Yeah.
The irony isn't lost to me when I listen to Jesus My Gorilla. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry.
But yeah, and I actually, it's funny to me. It was like right when Instagram was kind of really popping off too. Instagram just got Instagram videos, and there were, me and my friend that worked at the coffee shop, we had croissants. So we'd always make these videos of like throwing croissants on the ground and like flipping them off and then playing the clip of Jesus, the I Am a God clip. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like, just everything we just talked about, I think we actually kind of already covered it, but it was just like, yeah, it was that time where I was like, okay, shit, like Kanye's on this now. Like what is going on? And you know, realizing it was and still is an anomaly in pop culture, just what the impact of the album was, the conversations around it. I can't really remember an album that stirred up so much conversation on this level. I mean, since then, really, I don't know if you guys can think of any, but it was just something everyone had to talk about. Everyone had to give their opinion about, and there's a clear divide, you know? And I feel like at that time, most people were on the side of not liking it. That's my memory. I'm not sure if that was the case.
Oh,
I know
it's sure.
critically acclaimed. Like if you go back and read the reviews, like most of them are pretty positive, but that's like people like us, like, you know what I mean? Like that's not like we're looking at it like from all these different angles, not just the angle of like, do we put this on and just like it, you know?
Do you like to listen to it?
Yeah. But so all that was just so interesting. And then I got to go to the Yeezus tour, which was obviously incredible experience. I still have videos on my phone, actually. And that was just, it was just one thing after another. And then all those interviews, I mean, we can maybe talk about those, but that to me was just as much a part of Yeezus as the album was, where it's every day you just had this new 45 minute interview to listen to. At least
that's
the
best part of Yeezus, is like the interviews, the tour, the merchandise, like just Kanye being Kanye, like everything about it was such a spectacular time.
Yeah, it's certainly my golden era of Kanye for sure. And the interviews are no small part of that. He was on fire, man. He was just on fire.
Doing it.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 €. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 €. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe. Dein Markt.
I remember it was my first time feeling like I needed to defend Kanye. Because when Kanye interrupted Taylor Swift, I liked Kanye. And I liked that he had said what he said about Bush. I enjoyed his music, but I wasn't like full bore a Kanye fan. And I didn't feel the need to be like, well, you know, Beyonce's video was better to everybody that I met. But I remember during the Yeezus tour, there was Kanye said something at one of the shows where, or maybe it was one of the interviews, that the performance that he was giving, that like artists give in these kinds of shows, was less like being in an office and less like an office job and more like police officers, military, and that you're putting your life on the line with some of the stunts that you're doing. And I think he was specifically talking about being at the top of the mountain that he did, and just like some of the heights and the safety measures you had to take for what he was doing. And that the media took that quote and just ran with it. And that there were police sergeants giving interviews, being like, Kanye, you can come and I'll put you on like duty for 1 hour and you won't make it. And all of this backlash where it's like, it was a hyperbolic comparison, but all he's really saying is that this is kind of dangerous, more dangerous than you think, and more dangerous than you just going to an office and sitting at a desk.
Mm. Yeah. Although I would pay to see Kanye be a cop for a day. Like, I think he'd be great at conflict resolution. Honestly, so calm, just assess the situation and figure it out.
See somebody commits a crime and he's just like, you know what? That's not a bad one though. Go ahead.
Oh, and Colt, we got to ask you about the Yeezus tour because you kind of opened up a wound there. Because Chris and I were supposed to go to the Yeezus tour in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, yep.
Or I guess technically St. Paul. Or no, actually, never mind. I don't know why I'm worried about this. It was somewhere in Minnesota. But the tour bus crashed and they had to cancel the show. And
I remember that.
See the Yeezus tour.
Wow, that's... Yeah, it was, I mean, it's definitely the best concert I've ever been to.
thanks, by the way.
I mean, even, I didn't go to the Glow in the Dark tour, though, and I was at the Life of Pablo show where he broke down and canceled the tour.
Oh, yeah, that was your night.
But the Yeezus tour, it was in San Jose. It fucking so stupid. Me and my friend were late, the same guy that I worked with, shout out Mario, that I worked with at making croissant videos. Like, we drove to San Jose, which was 3 hours, and there was traffic. And so we missed Kendrick Lamar opening for him, which, like, in my world, I mean, it wasn't then, but, like, looking back now, I could have saw Kanye and Kendrick in the same show. Yeah. Like, wow. Yeah. But, yeah, it was like, I mean, to this day, I mean, Pablo Tour maybe compares, but... Even Pablo was more, the visual was so compelling. You know, there wasn't really like a narrative or the narrative of Yeezus and how it interacted with not only the mountain, but also like the women that would come on stage and the whole Jesus coming out. Like, it was a show, you know? It was like, it was more, it was the most almost like Broadway style show that I've ever been to from someone working in his world. And it's just another kind of layer to his art, and, you know, it goes along. What's cool is it follows the narrative of the tour, follows the narrative of Yeezus, but he also incorporated his entire catalog into these five acts, which you look back on and kind of ties into the discussion of Kanye's life is this trajectory that corresponds with his albums, but it's also kind of the same story over and over where he's in this cycle and kind of like trying to figure out his life amidst the limelight, and how do you find love, and when you find love, how do you maintain love, but it's all dealing with the same components. But just to see it, you know, in front of your face. You know, people forget, like, Kanye was, like, the first rapper to, like, perform by himself. Like, that was a big deal when he started performing by himself. Before that, you know, it was pretty, like, standard in hip-hop to have, like, your whole crew on stage with you, where Kanye would just go out alone, which at that time was pretty rare. But then starting with the Glow in the Dark tour, like, no one was doing those stage setups. He didn't really, from what I've heard, you guys probably know, like, he didn't really make that much money with the Yeezus tour, because it was just so costly to put on. But again, this kind of speaks to this era of Kanye where a few years later, you realize he's like going broke, trying to like do all these cool creative things, getting himself in debt, you know, which leads to the Pablo era. But yeah, I mean, looking back on this era has been so fun in so many ways, and with new information and kind of colors certain things in differently. It's just been fun to go to relive this period lately.
Is your favorite song from that time still your favorite song on Yeezus?
That's a good question. I think so. It's been I'm In It forever. Like Gun to the Head, I'm In It might be my favorite Kanye song ever. It's definitely my favorite on Yeezus, although almost every song on Yeezus is like,
how do you even rank them?
Yeah, it's hard. But the production of I'm In It is just so good. We'll talk about it on the episode from a production standpoint, but I don't even listen to the words of that song really. It's like, it's the production is so good, and all like it's this whole roller coaster, tempo changes, modulations, like the dog sample as a snare drum, like
there's just kind of basses at the end. It's so good.
Yeah. It's just, I think that would have to be probably mine then and still now. It reminds me a lot of, I don't know, I always think of Eyes Wide Shut when I hear that song. Even though Runway is like the more like noticeable.
Love that. I love that I'm in it reminds you of a quiet movie like Eyes Wide Shut. I love that.
Well, it's like, yeah, Eyes Wide Shut's quiet, but it's not, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's like a
sense of like aggression and dread.
Yeah. I don't know what about you guys.
Fucking in both of those things.
Yeah. Well, it's about, I mean, Eyes Wide Shut, like about sex and marriage and kind of so is Yeezus and, what about you guys?
It was blood on the leaves for me from the get-go. Like, I still remember trying to hear the album and not really doing a good job of it. And then I was in the shower and Blood on the Leaves started playing and I turned the shower off just to be able to listen to it, because just from the very beginning, it cut through the noise and just gave me goosebumps. I just stood there with the water not running, listening to Blood on the Leaves for 6 minutes, even though I had to like drive this hour drive. I was just blown away and turned the shower back on and hopped in the car. And that's when I went and bought the CD. That still to this day is a top three Kanye song for me. I think I Thought About Killing You has kind of overtaken as my number one Kanye song, but it's still my favorite on Yeezus.
Yeah. I think from the get-go, I Am a God was actually my favorite because, again, I love the thing people are going to hate, and what are people going to hate more than a song called I Am a God? And I love the fact that he screamed in it. Like, it was just like, so jarring and off-putting in ways that I love. But today, I would say it's kind of a tie. Either I'm In It or Hold My Liquor. Hold My Liquor has kind of emerged as my number one. Mm. I mean, just that guitar, Bon Iver mix of Chief Keef, like all of it. Yeah. I don't know, that whole song.
The guitar solo.
And it's starting to emerge as like a favorite of all Kanye fans.
Yeah.
And I consider myself ahead of that curve, so I'm just going to say it's my favorite.
That one, I mean, ironically for me, Blood on the Leaves was the one that like had to grow on me. It was the one which I know is like the opposite of most people's experience, but I don't know. I think something about the kind of meandering quality of it, the kind of free form.
Yeah, I'm a very modal.
Yeah, a very like structured kind of guy, and like not finding that footing in the song. It took me a little bit of getting used to, but obviously, it wasn't like I disliked it. It was just like one of the songs that just wasn't hitting for me on the first, you know, couple of listens.
But even the worst Kanye song is better than like 99% of songs.
Yeah. And well, what's funny about this album too, which I hope is a lot of people's experience when they listen to The Season, is like you will find new respect for like Guilt Trip and Send It Up, the ones that kind of don't are probably the least popular. Yeah, the least popular of the song of songs on Yeezus. Like when I think once you appreciate what they do narratively, it'll like hopefully will click for some people. Especially Send It Up, for me, at least narratively, might be for me like the most brilliant use of a song on an album. I won't say ever, obviously, but it's a brilliant use of a song. It's just like not the song itself, but just what it is, what it represents, how it mirrors on site. Like, we'll get into all of it, but I think people will find a new appreciation for it.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, because you deal with a lot of lyrics, obviously, and lyricism and thinking through what is, I'm sure you've considered, like top tier lyricism. What does that mean, not only to yourself, but to people, and what are the degrees of it? And one of the things that I keep thinking about is the relationship people have to what qualifies as great lyricism. Because I think some people might listen to Send It Up and think that maybe there's a few good lines, especially at the end, when Kanye's like, you know, heart colder than the souls of men, Yeezus just rose again, those kinds of poppy individual lines. But what you're saying about the role that Send It Up and Guilt Trip play on the album, and how you have to craft everything in the album on every song leading up to those, on those songs, and what comes after to make them have the power and impact that they have. Does that mean great lyricism, or is that great artistry? Is that great structuring as compared to maybe somebody that's just delivering a flow of great punchlines and wordplay? And
yeah, I think people get lyricism and rap skill, like they often go hand in hand when I think they're separate things. Like like Kendrick Lamar is a good example, or like even like Lupe Fiasco, where like Lupe Fiasco, obviously a great writer, obviously a great rapper. Like technically he's going to come up with creative flows to match his really creative lyricism, where Kanye, I feel like, and that's like much more obvious, like he's doing all these gymnastics but also pairing them with like great words. So like that's incredible, and that's like that's itself a skill. But Kanye's always been different because he's a rapper, but he's kind of not, like he's not your, I feel like rap to him is just like another tool, right? It's like, it's not like in him in the way that it is a Kendrick Lamar, if that makes sense. Like it's not, it's much more, here's like a piece of stone I'm going to chisel, you know, a little bit at a time and like come up with this big structure, but it's not as free flowing and natural as someone that could just like freestyle forever. Like I don't think Kanye's probably can really freestyle all that well. And that's not really a knock on him.
You take it's just that like, back.
I mean, I've watched the videos.
In terms of like rap, he can freestyle really well when he's just singing and like finding cadences. Like that's how he seems to write. But like, yeah, it comes like coming up with words on top of, like, it's just not his thing, right? And I think that to me speaks to like what he does lyrically on records, which is very much more like script writing almost, you know, like as opposed to just like this beautiful like flowing cadence of words.
I think you're right, because Chris's this is a compliment to you, Chris. Kanye's
thank you
background has always just been, I think, art. Like he used to go to museums with his dad and stuff. Like he grew up like drawing and painting. He's always talked about the movies he's loved. Like to him, I think it all just kind of meshes together and he's just creating art.
Yeah. No, I mean, and we kind of talked about that in the first episode, where it's like he says if playwriting gave him the biggest platform today, he'd be a playwright. Right. It's like it's pretty clear that like he was drawn to rap in some part just because it was the biggest genre of the time, as that was the biggest platform, the biggest microphone. But I mean, clearly he's transcended hip hop. You know, like he exists outside that realm, and in some ways, it's almost like, yeah, should he even be like making hip hop music anymore? Like I could see a world where he just doesn't and starts doing other shit, you know?
Yeah.
Cause it just seems like too narrow of a space for him now.
We're waiting for his new metal album.
Yeah.
If Kanye made a new metal album, I would be, as somebody that still loves like Disturbed, Linkin Park,
I think you'd implode.
I would go nuts. That would be such a collision of worlds, and just my life would be complete.
Yeah. Well, he did appear on a Fall Out Boy song. Not that they're new metal, but that's as close as we've gotten.
It was very interesting too, because he just disses Fall Out Boy in the middle of the song.
You know what you're signing up for when Kanye's featured on your song.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even know who these guys are, but I'm here. So, but yeah, talking about, I've been thinking about that and worrying about it, because you look at the journey of his discography, and Jesus is King feels like such a epilogue is probably not the right, but like last chapter, final chapter, climax to the journey that he had been talking about, especially in the way that it kind of pays off on Jesus Walks and Through the Wire, which were the two songs that really elevated him. And even All Falls Down and the social concepts that he was exploring, it feels like Jesus is King is him getting through a lot of the baggage he had on the first album and had been exploring on all the rest. And it works so beautifully. I wonder, creatively, especially with the level that Kanye's on, how do you follow that up? And honestly, he's always talked about the next part of his life, so it makes sense onto the next saga, right? In the wake of his marriage ending at this point, that seems to be the kind of thing that he would talk about.
Yeah.
And he's always used music as a means of catharsis. And and self-exploration and working through these emotions. And the question then becomes, is this something he wants to work through publicly the way that he has in the past? Or is this something that takes a little longer to process to reach the point of being music? And I do wonder if a lot of the delays for God's Country, then Donda, and where we're at currently kind of coincide with a little bit of a crisis when it comes to what am I saying right now? What aspect of my life am I talking about? I think you even saw that a little bit with Love. I always love everybody, love everyone. The album he was going to release before Ye that he scrapped, because I think he was still working through some of the concepts on that and delivering it, but maybe not feeling quite as strongly on it until the backlash from TMZ happened. And it just codified all the stuff that he needed to talk about, and he raced to get it out. The same kind of thing with Jesus is King. He was kind of toying around with Yandhi, exploring what it was he wanted to say until he had this breakthrough with religion. I wonder when the next breakthrough will come.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that each album kind of follows controversy in some way. It's almost like he needs that little extra kick or something. Because, you can kind of trace back controversial moments happening before or after, whether that's by design or not, you know. Who knows? But, yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, I mean, the whole divorce thing is definitely saddening, and you don't want to rush anyone through that process. I can't even imagine what they can both are kind of going through at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's at the end of the day, I always just kind of wish him well, you know, like it's weird, but I worry about him all the time. Like I hate saying it, but historically speaking, like his fate odds, the odds of his fate are stacked against him, let's say, in terms of like dying of old age, you know, like all the trajectory is on points to tragic death, which again, I hate even saying that, but it's something I think about a lot. And that's what always worries me anytime there's a big shakeup in his life, especially now, like kind of the foundation being ripped apart. And who knows, maybe it's better for both of them. Like we don't know any of that information. So who knows, but that's the part of me that just worries, you know, and I don't know if you guys are the same way.
Music industry has such a different, superstition, but haunting, I think, from so many of the superstars or legends in that industry specifically that have something tragic happen. I mean, the 27 Club originates from music, right? I think it kind of has grown to include actors and others, but yeah, there is that sense with musicians whenever there is kind of a downturn that I think you just tend to worry a little bit more in that field than say like an actor that's had a few bad movies or having something go through. You're like, oh, they'll go to rehab. That's what actors do. But music can feel so like destructive of an industry.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Yeah, and I mean, Kanye is a musician. I mean, music is one of those weird things where we can look at a filmmaker and we can watch a movie and we could try to figure out like what they're going through. But music is so different. Like it's in your ears. Like you really feel it. And Kanye is just so open and vulnerable about these things, especially suicide. Since 808s and Heartbreak has been very open about it and talked about it. And I think especially he talks about it on Ye and Kids See Ghosts, like this album where he's, you know, the song Ye opens with a song called I Thought About Killing You. And this you is this other part of himself. He suffers from bipolar disorder and he's working through these suicidal thoughts. And then Kids See Ghosts ends with Cuddy montage, which is using a sample from Kurt Cobain. It's infused with the spirit of Kurt Cobain, who killed himself. Mm. Like, Kanye is always talking about these things, is always open about them. And the fact that he is so clear about it and so willing to offer that part of himself up to the world and make it part of that listening experience, that, like, I actually always feel really good about him. Like, I think he surrounds himself with good people, and now he's found God again. And not that he found God again, but, like, it's become such a part of his music in a way it wasn't before. Like, I think he's somebody who's probably on the right path. And you're right. Like, we don't know what's going on between him and Kim. We don't know how painful that was or where he's at now. But I can only assume that, like, we're going to hear about it through the music whenever it comes out. And even in Kanye's lowest moments, even in the moments where, like, I'm scared for him, like, honestly, I was after hearing Kitsy Ghost, like, I found it troubling at first. Like, the more I think about it, the more I realize, like, he's somebody who's just, he's willing to put himself out there like that. And because he's doing that, there's something, like, I trust him. Like, I trust that he's going to use music to work his way through these things.
Yeah. That reminded me of the first time I listened to Damn, too, actually. I remember that I was, like, really worried about Kendrick after I heard Damn. In retrospect, it kind of, I probably shouldn't have felt that way, but that was what I came, that's what I, the conclusion or the feeling that I came out, because he just kept saying, like, no one's praying for me, and, like, so much of the record is, like, super dark and, like, sounds like he's, like, in this really bad place.
Especially coming off of what you learned in To Pimp a Butterfly, right?
Yeah.
There was so much kind of self-anger and suicidal thoughts at times.
But yeah, that's a good point, Travis. Like, it feels that way because it's, like, because they are putting all that in the music so transparently and vulnerably, where you, yeah, it does make you feel like they feel, like, you can empathize. You literally feel it in your body because they're so talented at expressing whatever they're going through the music. But yeah, then you think about, well, the music is how they're kind of getting through these things. So yeah, maybe Kanye does need to put out an album.
I mean, Kanye thrives on that communal thing, I think. Like, he loves his fans. He loves people listening to his music and feeling inspired by him. And he always has his friends around. Like, I don't know. In a weird way, I feel like he's in a good spot.
Mm. It'll be, I mean, the timeline people have in mind now is tying it to the Yeezy Gap and the Yeezy Gap release. So we'll see if
we're just guessing at any time music's going to come out, grabbing on anything we can.
Yeah. Please.
I was up at 5:30 a.m. this morning trying to get those foam runners.
Oh, took a fat success.
No, took a fat L.
Everyone took a fat L.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Twitter timeline was just full of people being like,
yeah.
Loss. I hate you, Adidas. Like,
yeah.
Stop doing this to me. I've took one dub trying to get Yeezys from just, like, the regular wait in line, magically break through to pay. And they were my grail Yeezys, like,
oh, really?
The ones that I wanted more than any, and that was the triple black reflective. And I was so amazed. But it was one of those things, like, we were at my wife's parents' place for Thanksgiving, and I'm waking up at 5 a.m. like, just on my computer, trying not to wake her, being like, refresh, and bringing it up on my phone.
Yeah.
One day, more foam runners will be available to all.
He promised. Yeah, he promised someday.
Yeah. One of the things, looking back on Yeezus at this point, I always looked at it as the turning point album in terms of, you see all the bleakness that we get from Graduation into 808s into My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy that's really escalating till we get to Yeezus, and how that was such an upswing, and it just felt that there were going to continue to be upswings. Which is one of the other things I was just like, what will Kanye write about now in terms of an album? Because he's settling into family life, he's financially secure, religion's good. Like, what will be the next topic? And then everything happens with Kim and that relationship, and it casts so much of this recent era of Kanye, like the 2010s Kanye,
yeah,
into a little bit more of a its own era and a little bittersweet. Everything from Yeezus to Life of Pablo, songs like Only One.
Yeah.
There's just going to be a little bit of that what a time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been so weird in some ways working on this season at this moment. You know, I know you guys wrote your parts before, but kind of returning and working on the scripts to make my additions recently. Yes, yeah, it's just bittersweet, I guess. Like, you know, I'm literally working on my additions to Bound 2 right now. And
oof,
it's literally paralleling with all this news about Kim and Kanye divorcing. And it's just, yeah, it's tragic in a way, you know, like knowing now the end of the story. I don't know, anything can happen still, obviously, but it's just, you know, believing that the news is true and that's going to be the conclusion. Yeah, it's just kind of sad, you know. I mean, I think you guys are both married. You know, you don't go into marriage thinking you're going to get a divorce, so it's not like, yeah. I don't think it can be a pretty experience, even if it's the best thing for both of you. I think it's difficult, especially with kids involved. I just can't imagine. It's probably a difficult time, but yeah, I mean, it was such a bright spot, you know, especially on Yeezus. It was, you know, the brightest of spots on the darkest of albums, right? Like Bound 2.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes the record so great, is that it does come to this glimmering, divine kind of conclusion after all this chaos and like loathing and indulgence and just like the darkest, kind of exploring the darkest aspects of who you are and reckoning with those things and confronting them. And then here, you know, on the horizon kind of comes this like beautiful sun, a literal sun reemerging.
Yeah.
That'll make sense to most of you once the season's over. But it's just kind of bittersweet. And kind of approaching the last episode, like, how do we, and we'll talk about it offline, but yeah, it's like, how do we now acknowledge what's kind of transpired since Yeezus? Because, you know, I always try to approach the albums that I do as like time capsules, like, and this one very clearly is a time capsule into that moment of his life and where he was. And it's ironic now too, because it's like, on one hand you have the divorce, on the other hand you have Kanye's now the richest, you know, black man that ever lived in U.S. history. So wild. And you go back to this era where he's, you know, desperately pleading for backing for his creative ideas. No one's giving him a shot. And so there's this like in the moment love story that really works out with him and Kim. And it's like these things moving on opposite paths, where the marriage seemingly goes one way and his success as a designer goes the other way, where they're like both like peaking. One's, I guess, an opposite, whatever the opposite of a peak is. And then
cratering.
A cratering, and one's like reaching a pinnacle. Like, it's the story of Kanye West, right? Like, that's something he's talked about his whole life, is this dichotomy of really great things happening and also really tragic things happening, and him trying to like reckon with how to deal with those two things, how to like mend those together.
Yeah, that's been from Late Registration, he started exploring exactly that topic. And we're covering Graduation now in our 2.0 run through the discography, because you learn so much the first time through, and then you're like, I need to go back and talk about like this album again or this song again. And going through Graduation for the second time, you just see how huge of a lead into 808s it is. And all of these, I guess, not plots being set up, but the themes of 808s are starting to emerge already in Graduation. And there's a little more innocence, a little more happiness, because there was at that point, but you can still see the negative aspects of the life he's living creeping in. And him as the artist, even if him as the character, he's not necessarily aware of it song by song, him as the artist putting the album together is very aware of it and the implications of that. And the fact that he's, as you're saying, continuing to explore that dichotomy for so many years now, and just again and again trying to understand, like, why do I keep ending up here? How does it keep working out to where things are like this? But thinking about Kim and Kanye in general and Bound 2 and Yeezus, I come back to Wolves and the fact that Wolves seems to be such a song acknowledging that each of them were at a point of feeling broken. And by each of them loving each other when they felt neither of them deserved love, it really had a healing, rejuvenating, resurrecting like effect. And maybe that's the ultimate takeaway, is even if the marriage didn't end up lasting for both of them, it ended up being exactly what they needed to, I don't know, heal from the wounds that they had leading up to that point.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, especially thinking about Kanye, just his, I mean, every album until Jesus Is King, really. I mean, especially Yeezus was dealing, has dealt with how difficult it is to be a celebrity and how alone you can feel in this thing you thought was going to be the greatest thing in the world and how hard it is to find love. Like, to see those stories coming together and learning how to work that crazy world of celebrity together, like, they were just so important to each other for so long. And Kim was so important to Kanye's music. He wrote that poem to her in Lost in the World. Like, their journey through the music is kind of incredible to watch.
I'm sure all the Kim Kardashian fans are like, you could do the same thing with Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Actually, yeah, the last episode of Keeping Up finally addressed the start of the divorce.
Oh, really?
And the tipping point of what happened. I was seeing all these articles talking about how Kanye saying that Kim and Kris Jenner trying to get him help was white supremacy was really the tipping point for her in terms of the relationship and what was salvageable. But in that episode, you see her kind of coming to terms with the idea that my marriage is over, which is really,
it's heavy stuff
to have on TV.
Yeah, that's so that was true. Like the him getting help, he thought that was. Did he say that on Twitter or something?
Yeah, he tweeted that out. Like, Kim and Kris tried to have me, like, doctors come and take me away.
Yeah, I remember
something.
I don't remember
white supremacy.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Kanye tweet.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, so for the Yeezus season, any moments in particular you want listeners to pay attention to or that you're really excited for people to hear? I'm sure the I'm In It episode, and as you're saying, Send It Up. But any specific line or specific sonic moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bound 2, I know that's like it near the end of the season, but
just listen to the whole season.
Yeah, listen to the whole
season.
That's
how you get them to listen to everything.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's such a payoff in so many ways, musically. But, I mean, even the On Site episode, which, you know, will probably air shortly after this comes out, it's the second episode of the season. You know, what that sets up sonically, it's like, you know, not an accident about, even down to like the very intervals that he's using. Interval is just the space between two notes. You know, there's this recurring interval that happens on almost every song, which is called a minor second. It's like the closest, if you can imagine a piano in your mind, it's like whatever key you're touching, it'd be the next key right next to it. So if you're familiar with that, if you play those two notes at the same time, it sounds quote unquote terrible. It's like this really dissonant, harsh sound. And he uses that interval pretty much in every song, pretty prominently, especially on in the first act. But just the way, it's like one thing to like, okay, define an album with a certain sound that happens all the time. But, you know, when we get into the details of like, okay, new slaves, it kind of speaks again to like you guys finding lyrical connections where I find musical connections. You know, new slaves is in a certain key signature, D minor. So is Blood on the Leaves. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. And then you dissect like, oh, what two notes are those? The horns playing dun 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 dun, 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 dun on Blood on the Leaves. It's like, oh, those are the same exact two notes that were played on New Slaves. And then you're like, oh, he says Blood on the Leaves multiple times on New Slaves, and then there's a song called Blood. It's like
it's almost you like just you go through.
Yeah, it's like it's, so you just start discovering all these just those little nuances that, you know, is what or is why we do the show. But I think, yeah, New Slaves is a great episode. You guys killed that one. I think all of them. I mean, I'm really excited about this season only because like every song, it's a 10 song album. So everyone is so loaded with stuff where it's like sometimes when you get to a longer album, you know, it can get watered down, but each one of these songs are so potent that, you know, I feel really strongly about every single episode, which, you know, I can't really say that about every season of Dissect. You know, sometimes there's just songs that are not as strong, where Yeezus is so condensed, so compact that every single song is just full of great stuff.
I love that. That's the most kind response you could have had when Chris is like, what episode are you most excited about? And you're like, all of them. All of them are amazing.
What I'm most excited about is the intro because I got to talk about Stravinsky, Bob Dylan, and Kanye all in the same 5 minutes, which is like, for me, that's an incredible feat. It like takes everything I love and puts it all in one jumble to start a season.
That's what I was thinking of when you talked about, you know, if Beethoven were alive today, would he be making classical music? Probably not. And the trajectory that you painted going from Stravinsky to Dylan to Kanye and showing that this spirit of the rebel or this punk spirit of I'm going to take what we all know and love and upend it and confront you with this new thing and how the public reacts, how that transitions through genre, through era, and how that spirit's alive and well generation after generation, which was really cool. But I was thinking that would be Beethoven, right? It's that same journey.
Yeah, I could have started with Beethoven. I could have started, you know, pick a generation, you know, like there's gonna be the ones that last the test of time usually are these kinds of artists that are, I mean, that's why they stand out, is because the genre was in one place and after they left or during their time, they stretched it and blew it up and created something new coming from that destruction. It's the same story over and over and over with these great artists. Even you say things about like Picasso or like any great, any Kubrick, like what, take your genre, take your medium, like it's the same story over and over. So I just wanted to draw that line quickly in the beginning of the season, but like, hey, like this moment that you remember 7 years ago, 8 years ago, is actually like something we're going to look back on probably like 100 years from now, as at least Kanye himself will be that guy. And Yeezus is such a, you know, pivotal part of his career that I felt that it was necessary to kind of frame it that way.
Damn straight.
Very, very much so. anything else? Any last words?
No, just thank you guys. Yeah, we'll do another one at the end of the season on the Dissect feed, but I know it was delayed and sorry for that, but
it's okay.
I think it's the right time. I think it's good. And you guys did incredible work and I'm glad that people are going to hear more about your guys' ideas and in a very concise way. So it's
as opposed to our 2-hour episodes on Drunken Hot Girls. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't mean it like that, but good point. No, good point.
It's a good point.
No, yeah. I mean, you guys are great writers. It's one thing to like be able to talk about Kanye, but it's another to like put it into really coherent and beautiful words, which you guys are both really excellent writers. So that's not like, you know, your podcast isn't that. It's a conversation but you guys also have the skill to write really well. So you know, some people might be familiar with writing already, but this will hopefully extend that audience a little bit into my audience. So really excited to get it out finally.
Thank you.
It feels like a nice collaboration. I remember when we first emailed back at the, what was it, start of 2016, like, kind of thing. And
when we first, yeah.
It was just like, you were getting going with the first season of Dissect. Our podcast was in its first year as well. And I don't know, it's cool to see that 5 years later.
Still doing it, yeah. Somehow.
Still doing it. Yeah,
still talking about
to collaborate. Yeah, it was nice. It was very exciting for both of us. So we appreciate the opportunity to work with you on this level, and the opportunity to create a whole new flock to the gospel of Jesus. Mm. You know.
Yeah. Cool.
Absolutely.
Well, everybody, until next time, please stay wavy,
and please, for the love of God, keep it loopy.
Me, I tell them, raise your glasses, your glasses, your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol.